All right, Chavosai, good morning. Let us begin. Today's daf is Kuf Chav Ches 128. And we are picking up in Yeretz Hashem on the bottom of Kuf Chav Zayin 127b. And we're picking up at the two dots, two lines up from the bottom, Meiser Sheni. So first of all, we thank our sponsors for this morning's shiur. We thank Dr. Steve and Terry Zinn for dedicating the... Does she have that feedback? Do you know what that is? I'll go on. For dedicating the shiur this morning in memory of Steve's mother, Devorah Bas Yisrael Yoel, and with Hakaras HaTov to the entire Kehila for the outpouring of support shown to their mishpacha during their time of need. And with that, let us begin. Thank you. With that, let us begin. So we're picking up again 127b, and we're picking up two lines up from the bottom. Meister Sheni. So remember, you will say the Mishnah is talking about the types of items that you are permitted to move if you need to go ahead and clear out space for them. So amongst the items mentioned is Meister Sheni. So Meister Sheni that was redeemed, to which the Gemara says, Pshita, that's obvious. Of course you can go ahead and redeem Meister Sheni. Move Meister Sheni that has been redeemed. After all, it's totally permitted for use. To which the Gemara says, Pshita, L'tzricha, Shenasana Sekerim V'lonasana Sechomesh. What's the case? The case is where you redeemed it by ultimately, again, redeeming the keren, the principal, but not the additional fifth. The halacha is that when you go ahead and when you redeem Meiser Sheni, so the halacha is that you must go ahead and pay for the principal plus a fifth. The case in the Mishnah over here is where you paid the principal, but you didn't pay the fifth. So what's the chiddush? Kamash malon, the ein chomish ma'akev. And what you see from here that as much as you're obligated to pay the fifth in order to go ahead and redeem Meiser Sheni, lemaisa, the payment of that fifth is not ma'akiv. The payment of that fifth does not preclude the redemption from occurring. Va'tormos hayavish, and a dried tormos. So tormos literally translates as lupine. So you have a dried lupine. Sa'alocha lamais again. So you could go ahead and that you can't move. So the Gemara says, dafka yavish. It's dafka if it's dry. Avalach lo. My taimo cave on the marir lo achla. So we'll say, so apparently a dried lupine is so bitter that even animals would not generally eat it. So because animals wouldn't eat it, therefore halacha lemaisa, you can't move it on Shabbos. Tap of kuf chaf ches. Avalo es hatevel. But you cannot go ahead and move tevel. So remember again, essentially the Mishnah telling us that tevel is mukta. Sorry, that tevel is mukta. So says the Gemara Pshita. Isn't that obvious? Lotzicha b'tevel tavel midrabbanan. What are we talking about? We're talking about rabbinic tevel. What's the example of rabbinic tevel? Shezaru ba'atzitz she'in lo nakuv. You went ahead and you planted it in an unperforated flower pot. So remember again, halacha l'maisa, if you plant something in an unperforated flower pot, on a technical level, that is not considered to be mechuber. That's not considered to be. Zavi, you can move it. You can move it. That's not considered to be something that is truly attached to the ground. And therefore, halacha lemaisa, it's only tevel midirabanan. So the Mishnah is teaching that even though it's only tevel, even though it's only rabbinic tevel, nevertheless, halacha lemaisa, you are still ideally not permitted to move it on Shabbos. Below Meiser Rishon. So the next case in the Mishnah was, and you can't move Meiser Rishon that did not have its trumas Meiser removed. Pshita, that's obvious. Lo tzricha shektimo bikri. Shenat lemena Meiser, v'lo not lemena truma gidola. What's the case? The case is where you went ahead and you removed it while the grain was still piled, before it was fully processed, and you took Meiser Rishon, but you didn't yet take truma gidola. Ma'alutemu, what would you have thought? Kido amr le Rav Papa la Abaye, you might have thought, like Rav Papa said to Abaye, both said that was the end of yesterday's daf. Kamash molam kiddushan le Abaye. Therefore, the Gemara says we go back to the answer that Abaye gave. Find a reference back to yesterday's discussion. Veloas Meiser Sheni, but you can't go ahead and move Meiser Sheni that has not been redeemed. To which the Gemara says, Pshita, Rabbi said, that's obvious. Meiser Sheni, which hasn't been redeemed, is effectively unusable. If it's unusable, therefore, halacha lemaisa, it's mukta. So, lo tzricha, deniftu, velo niftu, kil chasan. We'll say, what's the case? The case is where it was redeemed, but it was not redeemed in accordance with the normative halacha. What does that mean? Meiser, we'll say, in the case of Meiser, what that means is as follows. Meiser, shepado agabe asimon. So we'll say, in the case of Meiser, it would be where someone redeemed it on an asimon. The Rabbi says, it's interesting. Asimon, for those of you who are a little bit older, Asimon is not the reference to the little coins they used to use in Eretz Yisrael, you know, to make a phone call, right? Asimon in this context actually means like a slug, an unminted coin. So a coin that has the metal, but it's not stamped in any way. That's called an Asimon. So the Gemara says, what happens if you went ahead and you redeemed my Sashena Asimon? That doesn't work. Why not? The Pasuk says, literally it means, you shall pile the money in your hand. A reference to the idea that you could transfer the sanctity of Maaser Sheni onto a coin. But yet the Gemara tells us, what type of coin? Davar sheyesh botsura. What type of coin can you go ahead and use? Only the type of coin that has an image on it. So if the coin has an image, then halacha lemaisa, it works. But if the coin doesn't have an image, then lemaisa, again, it doesn't work. So we'll say, so the case over here that the Mishnah is talking about, when we say maaser sheni that hasn't been redeemed, we mean it has been redeemed. It just hasn't been redeemed on an ideal type of coin. Whereas it's normally supposed to be redeemed on a coin with an image, this maaser sheni was redeemed on an unminted coin. And therefore the Mishnah says it's not really called redeemed. Because it's not really called redeemed, therefore halacha lemaisa, it's mukta. What about the case of Hekdish? Hekdish, Shechila, Gabi Karka. Hekdish will also be a case where it was deconsecrated on real estate on Karka. The Rachmana Amar Vinasana Kesef Ekamlo. The Torah says that for redemption of Hekdish really requires money. And because you did not redeem it with money, but you redeemed it with Karka, therefore it will not work. So we'll say, so that's the case. The case where the Mishnah says that you cannot move Maaser Sheni, which hasn't been redeemed, or Hekdish, which hasn't been redeemed. So although our reflexive reaction to that is, that's obvious. If it hasn't been redeemed, these items are mukta. So the case there for the Gemara tells us, no, they have been redeemed. They just weren't really redeemed correctly. So because of that, the Mishnah tells me, I can't move them on Shabbos. V'lo as haluf, you can't move luf. So we'll say, so luf, as we saw in the Mishnah, luf is some type of legume, which was not considered to be normally edible. So you can't go ahead and move the luf. You could move chatzav. Again, so we'll say these are different types of foods or different items. You can move chatzav. Why? Because chatzav could be fed to deer. Similarly, you can move mustard seed. Because mustard seed is fed to doves. You can also go ahead and move shards of glass. This is very interesting. Apparently, an ostrich eats glass shards. So therefore, it's good to know, you could go ahead, bless you, you could go ahead and you could move shards of glass on Shabbos, because ultimately, again, they're fit for ostrich consumption. Amr le Rabbi Nosson. So therefore, again, says Rabbi Nosson, well, if that's the case, then you should be able to move bundles of vines. Why? Because vines are edible by elephants. So we'll say, so again, remember, having an ostrich was kind of like just as common as having an elephant. So if that's the case, that you can go ahead and move glass shards, because after all, it's fit for ostrich consumption, you should be able to move bundles of vines also, because it's fit for elephant consumption. Says, come on, that's ridiculous. Ostriches are common, elephants are not. So I must say, obviously, reflecting what was and what wasn't common. Amra Meimar. So Meimar says, well, that's true. When can you move glass shards on Shabbos? That's only if you actually have an ostrich. So in other words, Rav Shingon Leon comes along and says, while it is true that ostriches consume glass shards, and therefore halacha lemaisa, glass shards should not be mukta. They're not mukta as long as you actually have an ostrich. But if you don't have an ostrich, then halacha lemaisa, it will be mukta on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Ashi, Rav Ashi says, Amar Rav Ashi, Nam Eimar, But one second. Remember again, Rabbi Nosson, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, that the same way that glass shards aren't mukta, because lemaisa they could be consumed by ostriches, so bundles of vines should also not be mukta because they're consumable by elephants. Yisle pilin amaylo. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. So you're telling me then, same idea that only if you have elephants, that lemaisa the vines will not be mukta. Elaroi Hachanami Roy, to which again the Gemara says, you're right. Rather, Rabbi said, you don't have to actually have an ostrich, and you don't actually have to have an elephant. Rather, again, what the Gemara is saying is like this. Since these items are technically usable, therefore halacha lamaisa, they won't be muktza. Now, both say, now we're going to see that's actually not the halacha lamaisa. The halacha lamaisa is, in these kinds of situations, glass shards will normally be muktza, unless, of course, you have an ostrich. So the Gemara goes right there. So that's the end of that sugya. So in Achanan, both say, in general, what we begin to see is, if an item is fit for animal consumption, then by definition it's not mukta. And again, you don't really even have to necessarily possess that animal. But lamaisa, when you come to more specific things like shards of glass, which are not consumed by any other animal than ostriches, or for that matter, again, piles of bundles of vines, which are not normally consumed by elephants, under those circumstances, halacha lamaisa, the item will be mukta, unless, of course, you actually have those specific animals. Amar Abaye. So Abaye says, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Akiva, Kulu Svira Lehum. So both say, listen to this. Abaye said, all of these Rabbanim, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Akiva, Kulu Svira Lehum, they all hold to the same basic idea, which is, Kol Yisrael B'nei Malachim Hein. They all hold that Jews are royalty. Now both say, this again, so this is, of course, is a hashkafic statement that has halachic ramifications. That every Jew is royalty. What does this mean? So the Gemara, Reb Shimon Gamliel Hadam, Reb Shimon Gamliel, that's what we said before. Now both say, we're saying Reb Shimon Gamliel. Reb Shimon Gamliel said that halacha lemaisa, shards of glass are not mukta. Why aren't shards of glass a mukta? Because ostriches eat them. Now both say, Rashi points out, only the rich, only the wealthy, owned an ostrich, right? The common guy did not own an ostrich. So the fact that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Shita is, that halacha lamaisa, shards of glass are not mukta in general. Why? Because it's fit for an ostrich. I'm just a regular guy. I don't own an ostrich. Every Jew is looked at as a wealthy person, right? Every Jew is looked at as royalty. Therefore, since royalty maintains ostriches, so therefore, again, for a Jew, shards of glass are not mukta, because lamaisa, again, he's been able, a Jew is a ben melech also. That's Rabbi Shimon Leo. Rabbi Shimon, what's Rabbi Shimon's case? We'll say, so we saw this before. This is not b'nei malachim, sotan agad ma'achosein shemen vered. Shekein dark, shal b'nei malachim, losu b'chol. Supposed to remember we had this a couple of weeks ago, that we had this interesting discussion regarding medicinal healing on Shabbos. So on Shabbos, you can't do something that is clearly medicinal in nature. It's clearly medicinal in nature. So one of the examples the Mishnah gave was rubbing rose oil on a wound. Why? Because common people didn't use rose oil. It was very expensive. And the only reason a common person would use rose oil was to heal a wound. Masha'in came the wealthy, or royalty, would use rose oil all of the time. So ultimately, Rav Shimon says, Tiralocha lemaisa, a Jew, or any Jew is permitted to use rose oil on Shabbos. Why? Because Jews are b'nei malachim. Jews have a name of Elohim, therefore it doesn't have the appearance of medicinal healing, it just has the appearance of anointing one's self with oil. So the Gemara Rabbi Shimon Omer Kol Yisrael b'nei Elohim. Rabbi Shimon says every Jew is royalty, and therefore halacha lemaisa, a Jew could use rose oil even on Shabbos. So we'll say that's fine. So that's Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Akiva, what's the case Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Akiva? We'll say a fascinating case of a disanya. Harisha hayu noshin bo elef mana. Velavush itzdala bas kuf mana. Well, listen to this interesting case. So imagine Reuven owed someone $1,000. And he happened to be wearing a very expensive suit. Right? He was wearing a very expensive suit. Itzdala, it means like a cloak. He was wearing a very expensive cloak, a very expensive suit. So what's the halacha? So the Gemara says, mafshitin oso, umabishin oso itzdala haru'u yalo. So he said to him, listen, you know what, Reuven, you don't need to be wearing an Armani suit. So let's go ahead, take that suit, sell it off, use the proceeds to pay off part of the debt, and buy him a regular guy's suit. What do you need? He doesn't need such an expensive suit. So let's listen to this. So the Lashon Rabbah say is, you go, if he's wearing an expensive article of clothing, you take off the article of clothing, sell it, buy him itztala haru'uya lo. Buy him an article of clothing that is fit for his station in life, and use the rest of the proceeds to pay off the debt. So let's listen to this. Rabbi Yishmael, v'tanam Yishum, Rabbi Akiva, Kol Yisrael Uyin La'osa Itzdala. No, every Jew deserves an Armani suit, every Jew ultimately is royalty, and because of that, the Gemara says there's no such thing as a Jew wearing something that is, above his station. There's no such thing as above my station, right? Every Jew is royalty. So again, three different examples, three different opinions, but all pointing in the same direction that the Jew is looked at as royalty. We'll say beautiful Gemara. Says Gemara, Chavirei Kash, the Chavirei. So let's remember again, the Mishnah said that if you have Chavirei Kash, Chavirei Itzim, Chavirei Zuradin, if you have bundles of straw, bundles of wood, and bundles of soft reeds, so the Mishnah said, in his scheme of a Michael Behemoth, Metalkon also, if you set them aside on Erev Shabbos for animal consumption, then you could carry them. Ve'imlav, but if not, in Metalkon also, you may not carry them. So says the Gemara, here we go. So we'll say first of the wide lines on Kuf Chav Ches, Amud Aleph. Tan Rabbanon, Chavile Kash, Ve'chavile Eitzin, Ve'chavile Zuradim, if you have bundles of straw, bundles of wood, or bundles of soft reeds, if you set them aside for animal consumption on Erev Shabbos, you're permitted to carry them on Shabbos because you set it aside for use. But you did not. If you did not set it aside for animal use on Erev Shabbos, then halacha lemaisa, you may not carry it on Shabbos. Reb Shimon el Omer, Chavilin hanitalin biyat echad mutlataltlan. Reb Shimon el says, if it's a bundle which can be carried with one hand, then you can move it on Shabbos. However, b'shtei yadayim, two hands, asr l'tatlon, then you can't go ahead and carry it on Shabbos. So apparently, Reb Shingon Liel holds it, will say that halacha l'maisa, once already it's two hands, that's already considered to be a burden, and therefore cannot be carried on Shabbos. Chavilei siya, so we'll say these are different types of herbs and spices. So bundles of siya, ezov, karanis, Hichnisan le'etzim ein mistak b'mahen. If you gather them for the purpose of burning them, right, firewood, then halacha l'maaseh, you may not use them on Shabbos, which makes sense. Because once something is set aside for firewood on Shabbos, once something is set aside for firewood on Erev Shabbos, obviously that means it's actively set aside for non-use over the course of Shabbos. However, the maicho behemah, but if you set it aside for animal food, then mistam make b'mahen b'Shabbos, then ultimately you are permitted to get benefits from it on Shabbos. The kotem biad, and about any of these herbs or spices, what you could do is you could crush it with your hand, va'ochel, and eat it. So apparently, again, some of these were edible by people as well. So you could take it in your hand and crush it and eat it. Uvivach lo yikto makli, but you can't crush it with a utensil. Umolel va'ochel, furthermore, again, you could roll it between your fingers, I guess like this, to get off like the shell or the chaff, and then you could eat it. As long as you don't roll many of them in a utensil. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, the Chum say, Mola barasha etzbaosa va'ochel. You can roll these items, roll the herbs or the spices within your fingers, and then eat them. Obilvach lo yimlo biyado harbe kiderashu osa b'chol. As long as you do not roll many of them in your hand, in the same way that you would do during the week. V'chein ba'amisa, v'chein b'pigam, v'chein b'shar minei tavlin. And ultimately, I'm also this the same. These are all different types of spices. Same thing with amisa. Same thing with pigam. Same thing with other types of spices. My amisa. By the Gemara, what's amisa? Nina is mint. Mint sia. What's sia? Amar Rav Yehuda tzasri, ezov abarsa, koranis koranisa shma. So they, okay, well, so these are just all different names for these spices. Vaha hu damalei man buy koranisa v'shtacha chashib. One second. One time, someone was selling or said, "Who wants to buy koranisa?" And it turns out that he was selling chashi elat sia tzasri tzasri. Ezov Abarsa Koranisa Chashi. Okay, Rabbi say these are all just different names for these particular spices. Good. Says the Gemara as follows. Itmar. What's another interesting Shaila? Itmar. Or not really a Shal, more a statement. Basar Maliach. Rabbi say salt and meat. So in case where you have meat that was salted but uncooked. So what's Talacha? Mutlo Tatlo B'Shabbos. You could carry salted, uncooked meat on Shabbos. So we'll say, now what's the logic here? Technically speaking, meat that is salted, even though it is not cooked, is still edible. So therefore, because of that, it's not mukza. Basra taf, Rabbi say, basra taf, Rashi says over here, is unsalted meat. What happens if you have unsalted meat? Rav Huna amar mutra taltalo. Rav Huna says, you are permitted to go ahead and carry it on Shabbos. Rav Chista Amar Asra Talta. Rav Chista said it's Asra to carry it, or Asra to move it. So we'll say, what's the pshat? Rav Huna Amar Mutla Talta. Rav Huna says that you're allowed to go ahead and carry it. Why? V'ha Rav Huna hu Talmud d'Rav Hava. But yet Rav Huna was a Talmud of Rav. V'Rav K'Rav Yehuda Svira Le'di Islay Mukta. So was Rav Huna was a Talmud of Rav. Rav held like Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda holds a more restrictive view of Mukta. If that's the case, ultimately, again, how is Rav Huna allowing you to carry or to move unsalted meat on Shabbos? So I'll say, it's actually very interesting, to which the Gemara answers, B'mukta la'achila, so like Rabbi Yehuda. So I'll say, when it comes to consumption, he holds like Rabbi Yehuda. The muktzah taltel, when it comes to carrying something, sarvala k'Rabbi Shimon, he holds of the muktzah view of Rabbi Shimon. So we'll say, this is, I think, the first time we've ever seen such a thing like this. That we've always assumed that when it comes to hos muktzah, you are always choosing a side. You're choosing Rabbi Yehuda, who has a much more limited view. The way the Gemara phrases it is, Rabbi Yehuda holds of muktzah, Rabbi Shimon doesn't hold of muktzah. We've already mentioned many times that phraseology is misleading. Everyone holds a muktzah. There's no such thing as someone who doesn't hold a muktzah. The machlokis is your view of muktzah. Rabbi Yehuda has a much stricter, limiting view of muktzah. Rabbi Shimon has a much more permissive view of muktzah. So generally we assume that when it comes to l'chos muktzah, you're choosing a side. This, I think, is the first time that we've seen this concept where it's possible to hold of different opinions in different inyanim of muktzah. So apparently, Rav Huna will hold like Rabbi Yehuda. Ultimately, when it comes to consumption, he will hold of a much more limited view of muktzah when it comes to permitting what you're allowed to eat, what you're not allowed to eat. When it comes to moving an item, he adopts the more permissive view of Rabbi Shimon, and therefore, Allah Kalamaisa, he will allow you to even move unsalted meat on Shabbos. Quite amazing. Rav Chista says you're not allowed to move it on Shabbos. Yet Rav Yitzchak Bar Ami went to the house of Rav Chista once. And so they had some raw duck, and they were moving the raw duck from the sun to the shade. We call that mechama letzel. And yet what? And Rav Chista said, yes, you can move the duck from the sun to the shade in order to prevent the duck from spoiling. So we'll say, what do you see over here? You see over here that Rav Chista allowing the movement of unsalted raw meat. Yet again, we just heard Rav Chista said that it's muktzah. To which someone says, no. Shani bar avza, duck is different. Duck is different than meat. Why is duck different than meat? Ultimately, again, the chazila umsa. Because ultimately, I'm going to say, apparently, you could eat raw duck even without it being salted. I guess because duck meat is generally more tender than regular meat. Therefore, halacha lemaisa, it could be consumed even without salting. And therefore, halacha lemaisa, even Rav Chista, who would normally say that unsalted meat would be muktzah, would agree that unsalted duck would not be muktzah. Okay, so we'll say, so what comes out, interestingly enough, over here, is the Gemara seemingly saying that halacha lemaisa, salted meat, although it's raw, will not be mukta because it's consumable under certain circumstances. Unsalted meat will be the machlokes Rav Chista and Rav Huna. Tan Rabbanan, we'll say, so continuing along these lines, Tan Rabbanan, Dag Maliach, what about salted fish? Mutra letaltalo, right? You can move it, which makes sense because remember, salted fish, even though it's not cooked, is absolutely consumable. Dag tafel, what about raw unsalted fish? Asla tatlo, that you can't go ahead and move on Shabbos because it'll be mukta. Basar, bein tafel, bein maliach, mutra letaltalo. But meat, whether it is salted or unsalted, can be moved on Shabbos. So we'll say, and that is indeed halacha lemaisa, how the Rambam passes, how the Shulchan Aruch passes, namely, that since technically speaking, right, salted or unsalted meat can be consumable under certain circumstances, therefore halacha lemaisa, it is not muktzah on Shabbos. So the Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says, Tan Rabbanan, metaltan esat samas, mevnei shumaycha leklovim. You can carry bones on Shabbos. Why? Because it's consumable by dogs. Right? So even though people don't eat bones, halacha lemaisa, again, bones won't be muktzah because it's consumable by dogs on Shabbos. Amad Beis, basar tafuach, So you could carry unsalted meat on Shabbos. Why? Now it's interesting. Here the Gemara is actually Basar Tafuach means. Excuse me, I take it back. So we'll say. Remember again, the Gemara said before. One second. I'm sorry. Right. Sorry. Basar Tafuach. Tafuach Rashi says is Masriach. This is rotting meat. Rotting meat. Right. So meat that is on the verge of spoilage is going to be not mukta on Shabbos. Why? Because you can feed it to a chayo, to an animal. The Gemara says, "Mayim megulin." What about liquid that was kept uncovered overnight? So we'll say, remember again, this goes back to something we've learned many times, which is Chazal generally where goes there, that if you left liquid uncovered overnight, you're not permitted to drink it. Why not? What are we concerned about? We're concerned that halacha lemaisa, a snake may have come along, injected its venom into the uncovered water, into the uncovered liquid, and it poses a health risk. Yet the Gemara says over here that halacha lemaisa, so you can go ahead, emayim megulin is not mukta on Shabbos, why not? So this is actually very interesting because you could give it to a cat. Why a cat? If you look at Rashi, it's actually quite interesting. Rashi says, "Lo mazikli aras de nachash, shaf hanachashim hi ochelas." We'll say, interestingly enough, apparently snake venom is not dangerous to cats. Wow. So, right, it's a good fact, right? Something good to know. So we'll say, so why not? Because apparently, since cats eat snakes anyway, so therefore, the mice again, the snake venom doesn't pose a problem. So therefore, even my megulin ultimately will not be moksa because it's usable for a cat. Reb Shimon says, no. You're not allowed to maintain uncovered liquid. Whereas Reb Shimon Leal's shita is, it's definitely moksa. The reason it's moksa is because you're not even allowed to keep in your house such uncovered liquid. What are we concerned about? We are concerned that one may come to inadvertently drink it over the court. Right? One may come to inadvertently drink it. Reb Shimon Leal says, we don't want you maintaining that at all anywhere around your house. And therefore, halacha lemaisa, you have to rid yourself of it. So I will say, so bottom line, as you've come to see over and over again in Hilchos Mukta, an item becomes Mukta when it clearly serves no inherent purpose. What you're beginning to see is that halacha lemaisa, these food, we're talking specifically with food items now, even if a food item is not fit for human consumption, as long as it is clearly fit for some type of animal consumption, it will not be mukta on Shabbos. Weiter. Kofet Mishnah. Kofet es ha-salif ne'achufrochem. So we'll see another interesting case. You can go ahead and invert a utensil, in front of chicks. So you actually have this where we'll say, this is where the chicks need to get into the coop. The problem is the entrance into the coop is too high. So what do you want to do? You want to take a utensil and turn it, invert it, so that the chicks have like a step to get into the coop. So the Mishnah says you're permitted to do this. Now the Chiddush, of course, of this is that even though you are moving this kli for the sake of something that is mukta, because remember again, the chicks themselves are mukta, nevertheless, you are allowed to go ahead and move the utensil to facilitate the chicks' entry into the coop. K'deshi'alu v'yerdu, tarna gola shabar, so if you have a chicken that ran away, you could push it. You can nudge the chicken, right, until it enters back into the coop or enters back into the chatzer. Midadin agolun usiyach. And so what's the midadin means, if you look at Rashi, Rashi says, Ochez bitzavaro, ubitstadin vigororo, umisayo menane loberaglov. So we'll say, when it comes to, so remember, agolun are calves. So siyachin are young horses or young donkeys. So midadin means you could pull them. You could pull them, literally again, you could pull them by their neck or by their sides, and you could actively help move them back into their enclosures or into where they need to be. So just keep this in mind. With the chickens, if you'll notice again, the only thing you're allowed to do is you could push the chicken. With these other animals, like the calves and the young donkeys or horses, you could actually pull them. You could pull them by their neck, you could pull them by their sides in order to lead them back in. Isha, medades, and assumedly again, a woman could go ahead and literally again, drag her child. Now, what does it mean, drag? Rashi says over here, medades bino, ochzasa bizra osav me'achorav, umisayaito v'humaniya raglav olech. So we'll say, so again, let's say a woman needs her child to walk in somewhere. She can go ahead and lift, not lift him up, but let's say hold him by the arms so that he goes ahead and walks on his own. Amos, when is all of this true? Bizman shunotel achos umaniyach achos. only when the child, or for that matter, the animal, goes in and puts one leg in front of the other. Avalim haya gorer aser, but halacha lemaisa, if the animal or the child was dragging its legs, then this process would be aser. So both say, so now watch what's happening over here. So we essentially have three different cases. Case number one is the chicken. Well, four different cases. Number one is you could invert the kli, invert the utensil in order to allow the chicks to go in and out of the coop. Fine. Case number two, if you have a runaway chicken, you could help it get back home by nudging it, by pushing it. If you have a runaway calf or a runaway young donkey or young horse, in those cases, you could pull it by the neck, or you can go ahead and pull it by the sides. Similarly, again, if a woman needs to get her child to walk, so she could do is hold on to the arms, hold on to the arms of the child, to the hands of the child. And both in the case of the child as well as the calves and the donkeys or horses, they have to be able to walk on their own. So you can facilitate walking by helping to move the animal or the baby or the child. So says the Gemara, Amrad v'damurav, Beim ha-shenaf la'amasam, I may be karmic kistos manech tachtel. Suppose they now watch this. So the Gemara says as follows. So if you have a behemoth that fell into a channel of water, fell into a stream, so what's the halacha? Maybe karamikistos, you could bring mattresses. Umaniyach tachta. So we'll say, so again, remember, what's happening over here is the animal cannot get out of the body of water. So what you can do is you could bring like mattresses, essentially put them on the riverbed so that the animal is able to climb on top of them and get out. Vim also. And if the animal gets out, it gets out. Meisvei, reza kasha, behema shnaf la'ama samayim. If an animal falls into a body of water, oselo parnosa bimkoma, you can't take it out on Shabbos. So instead, what do? You feed it, right? Take care of it where it is. And you'll get it out after Shabbos. Parnosa in. So what do you see from it? You could sustain it and feed it where it is. Karamikistos low. But you can't go ahead and start bringing mattresses. And so I'm going to say, so again, remember, the reason Gemara is bringing this up is because this resembles the first case of the Mishnah. Right? The first case of the Mishnah was, I have young chicks. The young chicks need to get into the coop. They can't get into the coop themselves. What am I allowed to do? I'm allowed to bring a utensil, invert it, make a step for them to get into a coop. So therefore, again, Rabbi Huda calls the name of Rav. Same idea. If an animal falls into a body of water, can't get out, what can you do? Bring mattresses, put it on the riverbed so that the animal could step on top of it and get out, much like the case of the chicks getting into the coop. The problem is now I have another braisa. The second braisa says, you can't do this. You could feed the animal where it is, but you cannot go ahead and start bringing mattresses to go ahead and get it out. Lokasha, to which the Gemara is not a contradiction. Had the efshar beparnasa, had the efshar beparnasa. To which the Gemara says two different cases. In case number one, in case number two, so you could sustain the animal. So where the animal could be sustained where it is, everybody will agree, just sustain it where it is. The case where we allow the movement of the mattresses is a case where the animal cannot be sustained where it is. Under those circumstances, you could bring the mattresses for the animal to step up onto it. To which the Gemara says, so efshar beparnasa in ve'ilo maybe karam v'kistos u'maneach tachteha. So we'll say, so again, if you could support the animal where it is, we'll say, in an ideal sense, we'd always rather just simply sustain the animal where it is and avoid the extra tircha. But if the animal cannot be sustained where it is, then ein achinami, you are permitted to go ahead and bring the karam v'kistos. Means by effectively putting the mattresses on the riverbed and allowing it to be used as a step for the animals. Same idea with the chicks. You are negating the use of the utensil. So we'll say he holds that being mevatel a kli from its use is only a rabbinic issue. Tsar balichayim doraisa. And Tzar Bali Chayin will say an animal suffering is that you're not allowed to cause an animal to suffer. And again, you're supposed to do whatever you can to alleviate the suffering of animals. That's the Doraisa. V'asi Doraisa v'dachi Dirabanan. Therefore, we'll say the Doraisa of Tzar Bali Chayim will go in and set aside the Dirabanan of negating the functionality of a kli on Shabbos. Interesting idea. So Tana Gola Shabarcha. So we'll say next case was the Tana Gola Shabarcha, the chicken that ran away. So what do you say about the chicken that ran away? So remember when the Mishnah said, if the chicken ran away, Sa'alocha l'maisa, you can nudge it back in. Dochin in, medadadin lo. So what's very interesting? You can nudge the chicken back in, But what can't you do? You can't go ahead and medadin. So remember again, we have two different lashonos over here. Dochin means nudging. Medadin means like pulling or even like a shtickle lifting. So you see from here that with the chicken, you could push it, but let's say as opposed to, let's say, the calf, the young donkey, or the baby. I don't mean to group all of those like in the same thing, but you could actually like pull them and lift them a little bit. So what's the pshat? So the Gemara says, Tanina lohadotan rabbanon. Medadadin behemel chayiv of bechotzer valo satana goles. You can go ahead and pull, or even lift a little, which really means pulling. You could pull a little bit the behemoth, the chayin, the ofen, the chotzer, but not the tanagolas. Tanagolas is my tamalas. So we'll say, why is it that although you're permitted to nudge the chicken, you can't really like lift the chicken to help it walk? Because we'll say, what's the concern? See, what ends up happening with the chicken is, the moment you begin to lift the chicken a little bit, what could happen? The chicken can begin to flap its wings a bit and begin to lift itself totally off the ground. Now, the problem is if it begins to lift itself totally off the ground, then what? It turns out that what? That you're carrying the chicken. See, they're both saying, this is the difference. In the case of the calf, the young donkey, or the child, you could help, you could hold onto them or pull them a little bit, and there's no concern that you're going to end up carrying them because they have feet on the ground. The nature with the chicken, apparently, is once you, if you were to, let's say, put your hands underneath its wings to help facilitate its walking, it's quite possible that it would lift its legs and you would turn out, it would turn out that you would be carrying the chicken, which would be problematic. Tani chado. We have a brayse that says as follows: Medadadin behema chayiv of bechatzer. You can go ahead and we'll say so. Medadadin means pulling, right? You could go ahead and literally hold on to its neck or hold on to its side and help pull it along. So you could pull along a behema achayin of in a chatzer, avalo birshus harabim, but not in the rishus harabim. Right? Because they're both saying in the Rosh Hasharabim, we are concerned that halacha lamaisa, this has the appearance ultimately of carrying an item. Va'isha medada es bina b'Rosh Hasharabim. But a woman could help her child walk in the Rosh Hasharabim. And all the more so in the chatzar, well, I suggest you can imagine. So remember, this case actually comes up all the time, right? Well, what happens if a child cannot, it's not really such an issue, because we spoke about this before. You could even carry a child in Rosh Hasharabim, even without an Eruv, if the child has the ability to walk on his own, right? Because Chayin Nosiyas Atzmo, a living being kind of carries itself. What happens if Halacha L'maisa, though, the child can walk, but has to walk, but can't walk unassisted, right? So the child can walk, but has to hold on to it. So you see over here, a mother, a father, could hold on to the child's hands, even in Rosh Hasharabim, and all the more so in the Chatzar. The Tanya Yidach, another Braisa says, Ein Okrin Behema V'chayiv Of B'chatzar, Aval Dochin Ban Shei Kansu. You cannot lift up a behema chayna of in a chatzar, but you can go ahead and drag them a bit, right? Pull them so that they should enter. Hagufakash is an inherent contradiction. Amrit ein okrin. You say that you can't lift them up. Aval deduye madadinon. But you can drag them a little bit. Hadr amrit, then you said, dochin in midadadin lo. That you could push them a little bit, but not dragging them. Amr Abayi says, no, two different cases. Seifan asan l'tanagolas. Seifan asan l'tanagolas. We'll say, so the chicken apparently is the exception to the animal rule. That although when it comes to animals, under normal circumstances, what you are allowed to do is you could drag them a little bit. And I'm going to say again, remember, the case of dragging them is where halacha l'maaseh, you take hold of the neck of the animal, or you go out and you take hold of the side of the animal and you help pull it. Now, obviously, the animal has to be able to walk on its own. The chiddush of the Mishnah is, I can help the animal, again, by literally pulling it. But because at the end of the day, it's going to be walking on its own, it's not considered as if I am in any way carrying that animal. The chicken is the exception to the rule. Because apparently, again, the nature of a chicken is halacha l'maaseh, if you were to help drag it in any way, the concern would be that it lifts up its feet. Once it lifts up its feet, it turns out that what? I'm carrying the chicken. Which is why the only thing you're permitted to do by the chicken is what? Nudge it. You can nudge it, or even a bit stronger, you could push it, right? But you can't go ahead and in any way hold onto it to drag it. So the Gemara says as follows. Amar Abaye, similarly again, Haiman de Shechet Tanagoles. This was very interesting. Abaye says along the same lines, if you're going to shecht a chicken or a rooster, Lich b'shinu l'kari ba'ara. Make sure that you press its feet into the ground. Inami neidol lohu meidol. Or make sure lift its feet off the ground. What's the concern? Dilma manach lehu letarfe ba'ara. Because maybe when you're shechting the rooster will embed its claws, its feet into the ground. And there it will pull itself in a different direction than the shochet, and it'll end up tearing or dislodging the simanim, right? The kind of the veshet, the trachea, the windpipe, and they end up invalidating the shechita. So what it's saying over here is as follows. When you shecht a rooster or a chicken, you need to control its feet. You need to control its feet. Because ultimately, again, if you don't control, so either control it by pressing it to the ground, make sure that you have anchored the chicken's feet to the ground, or just lift its feet off the ground. Because if not, the chicken may pull itself in a different direction than the shechita, and could go and invalidate the shechita. Okay, says the Mishnah. Next case. You can't, now we're going to see what this means in the Gemara, but miyaldin means literally you can't birth an animal on Yom Tov. But you can go ahead and help the animal give birth. We'll see what that means. But of course, you could help a woman give birth on Shabbos. We'll say it's actually a very interesting sugya. The korin lo chachama mimakom lamakom, and you could even call for a midwife. Call for a midwife, right? Even if the midwife has to travel on Shabbos, the midwife is permitted to travel on Shabbos, even from a faraway place, to assist in the birth. We'll say, remember, in the eyes of Chazal, a woman in labor is a chola sheyesh ba sakana. She is considered to be a woman who is ill and in imminent danger. So therefore, halacha lemaisa, you could call her midwife, even from a different place, u'mechalim es ha-shabbos, and you could be mechalu shabbos for her, the kosher in es ha-tibor, and furthermore, you could go ahead and tie the umbilical cord. So we'll say, it's actually very interesting, once the baby's born, so you're allowed to go ahead and tie the umbilical cord. Rabbi Yossi says, af chotchen. No. You could even cut the umbilical cord on Shabbos. This is actually quite interesting about whether or not you're permitted to go ahead and cut the cord or tie the cord. So Tanakhama says you could tie the cord. Rabbi Yossi says, no, you could cut the cord. Because it was understood that leaving the cord attached, chas shalom, let's say that cord gets pulled, it could chas shalom put the child in incredible sakana. So the question is, how do you take away the sakana? Is tying it enough, or you could even cut it? Same way that ultimately, again, you're allowed to take care of the baby on Shabbos and the mother on Shabbos. Also, bris mila, all the needs for the bris mila can be done on Shabbos as well. What exactly that means, in other words, what you could do for bris mila on Shabbos, we'll see in the Gemara. So we'll say, here we go. Ketzad misadin. So we'll say, when we say, so the Mishnah made an interesting distinction. Apparently, you can't go ahead and birth an animal on Shabbos, but you could assist. So what does that mean? So Rabbi Yehuda Amar, Oches es havlat shelo yipa. So we'll say, this is interesting. So apparently, the way they used to deliver animals, I shouldn't say used to, maybe this is still done today, I don't know. So the person delivering would actually like put their hand into the animal. You would put your hand into the animal and pull the fetus out. The Mishnah says that you can't do on Shabbos. That you are, or Yom Tov, this thing over here. Can't do on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Right? But what you can do is assist in the animal's birth. So what does it mean ultimately, again, to assist in the birth? So here the Gemara says, okay, that's havlad, shelo yipol. So again, essentially, you could kind of wait until the fetus exits the mother and catch it so that it does not go ahead and fall onto the ground. Rav Nachman Amar, dochek babasar, kadei sheyetze havlad. You could press on the abdomen, I guess, of the animal to push the fetus out. The idea is you can't insert your hand into the animal to pull the fetus out, but I guess you could manipulate the outside of the body of the mother to ultimately push the fetus out. Tanya Kavase Rabbi Yehuda, we have a bright set support Rabbi Yehuda. Ketzad Misadin, how do you assist in the birth of an animal on Yom Tov? Ochsin es havlad shel yipol la'aretz. You hold on to the vlad. I was about to say, you catch it, so that when it comes out of the mother, it shouldn't fall onto the ground. This is interesting. You could blow into the nostrils of the baby animal. And you could help the baby nurse from its mother. This is incredible. So from Rav Shimon Gamliel says, we have, literally, merachamim means we exhibit compassionate care on the offspring of a kosher animal on Yom Tov. How do you do that? Hey, Avid, Amar Abaye, listen to this. Sabo say, this is incredible. This is incredible. I'll read it and then we'll explain it. Sabo say, let's say it first. Apparently, there was an issue. There is an issue that exists of, I guess, what we'll call like offspring alienation, where for some reason a mother is alienated from her offspring. And of course, if that happens, the offspring dies because the mother doesn't care for it, the mother doesn't feed it. So Rav Shmuel says, we dealt with offspring alienation on Yom Tov. How did we do it? Listen to this. Amar Abaye, maybe bul sham melach umaniach labesoch arechem. You take a fistful of salt and you place it in the womb of the mother who gave birth. Kedesha tiskar tzara uterachem alav. So somehow that fistful of salt obviously gives the mother pain because ultimately, again, she just gave birth. And the birth of the pain reminds her of her offspring. And as a result, she has compassion on her offspring. And we take some of the afterbirth from the placenta and we sprinkle it. Some literally, again, it's supposed to sound like amniotic fluid. Take some of the amniotic fluid and sprinkle it on the baby so that the mother should recognize the scent of the baby. Both of these incredible. This is wild. Apparently, it's only kosher animals that have this issue of offspring alienation. Isn't that incredible? Only kosher animals have this, aval tamei lo, but ultimately you don't have to do this by non-kosher animals. Why? Why is that? My time. Tamei lo merachka vlada. In general, the issue of offspring alienation is not an issue by non-kosher animals. We'll say, isn't that incredible? I have to think about this today, but there's definitely some major hashkafa involved in this as well. So furthermore, if you do have an issue of offspring alienation by non-kosher animals, then what? So the Gemara says, Vlada lo mekarva. Vimracha vlada lova. So it says, apparently, by non-kosher animals, they don't normally have offspring alienation. But if it does happen, there's no way to reverse that. Okay. So we'll say, Salocha lemaisa for our purposes. So you can't actively birth the animal on Yom Tov, which means sticking your hand into the animal to go ahead and pull out the offspring. But once the animal gives birth, you could help with that process. Either, again, by helping the Vlad, or by manipulating the outside of the body of the mother to push out the Vlad. Good. Mialdin es ha'isha. So we'll say, so on Shabbos, remember, you could help with the birth. You could help a woman in labor. Michdi. Remember again. So we learned that you could help a woman give birth on Shabbos. And furthermore, again, you could call her a midwife even from far away. So obviously, those statements, when you tell me that you could help a woman give birth, and you could even call her a midwife from far away, that clearly indicates to me what? That halacha lemaisa, you are permitted to be mechalel Shabbos for a woman who's in labor. It's obvious. So when the Mishnah says that she could be Machal Shabbos for her, what does that statement come to? Gonna always say, I don't need the Mishnah to say you can be Machal Shabbos for her. Why not? It's obvious. If you're telling me already that you could help her with birth, you have to boil water, whatever else you have to do. You tell me that you could go ahead and call the midwife, that the midwife could travel. That clearly tells me that whatever a woman needs to give birth, I could do for her on Shabbos, even if it requires Chol Shabbos. So why does the Mishnah have to come in and add in the phrase, oh, and by the way, you could be Machal Shabbos for her? So I'll tell you why. Lastly, what does it come to include? Listen to this. Lastly, had the Tan Rabbanon, Emaisa Tzricha Lener, Chaverta Madlakes Las Haner. So let's listen to this. It tells us that if the woman in labor says, I need light, you could light a candle for her on Shabbos. V'im haisa tzricha l'shemen, chaverta mevi'a l'shem b'yad. And furthermore, again, if the pregnant woman says, I need oil, so her friend could bring her oil. V'im eno sipek b'yad, and if, again, she needs more oil, so we'll say, so Pasha, so friend could bring oil in her hand. And if the pregnant woman in labor says, I need more oil, and the friend can't fit enough oil in her hand, what could she do? Mevia Besaira. But it's interesting. The friend could soak her hair in oil. Therefore, she could essentially transport the oil in her hair. And when she gets to her friend in labor, she'll squeeze out the oil from her hair. They may not see Bake Besaira. And again, if she can't transport enough oil in her hair, Mevia La Bekli. You can ultimately, again, bring her oil in a Kli. So I'll say so again. Amar Mar. So if the woman in labor says, I need light, so what do we say? Her friend is permitted to light a candle for her on Shabbos. So obviously, we just said before, whatever a woman in labor needs, you give her. You give her. Why? Because a woman in labor, halacha lemaisa, is considered to be a chola sheyesh ba sakana. She's considered to be in active danger. So whatever you have to do for her, you do. So what's the chiddush? Watch it, Sabo say. Lo tzricha besuma. What's the case, Sabo say? The woman in labor is blind. She's blind, yet she's saying, I need a nair. I need a candle. So madhem, what would you have thought? Kevin de lo chazi lo aser. Since she can't benefit from the light, therefore again it's aser. Kamashmalan e suve miyas vadaita savra iika midi de chazi chaverta vaavdili. Because so what do you see from here? Why? So if the woman in labor is blind, why does she want a candle? Why does she want the candle? Because she says to herself, I can't use the candle, but it gives me yishavadas. It makes me feel better to know that there's light. That way, my friend who's with me, if she sees I need something, she will do it. So Rabbi said, the chiddush is, if the woman in labor is blind, and she says, I need a candle, we kindle the candle for her. She's blind, but if it's going to make her feel better knowing that there's light, and therefore her friends could attend to her better, we do it for her. So you see something amazing. You see that not only can you do what is medically necessary for the woman in labor, but you could do for the woman in labor whatever is going to put her mind at ease. Even if it's not necessary, it could very well be, we don't need the nair. We don't need the nair. But if she wants it, we do it. So it's an incredible yisod. Also, Chazal understood that for a woman in active labor, it wasn't just doing for her what was medically necessary. It was making sure that she was calm. It was making sure that she felt safe and secure. So whatever you need to do for her to make her feel safe and secure, you do. We'll say one more line, then we'll stop. So remember, again, we said that Allah, if she needed oil, you bring her the oil. So the Gemara says, we'll say, so here's what's interesting. Remember again, so it's like a progression. If she needs oil, you'll bring her oil in your hands. And if you can't bring enough oil in your hands, then what? Her friend could soak her hair in oil, bring the oil to the woman in labor, squeeze it out there. And if that's not enough, then what? Then go ahead and bring an oil in a kli. So I don't understand. Save the machine. So this will say. So it sounds like bringing the oil in her hair is a better option initially than carrying a utensil filled with oil. Because apparently, again, if she brings it in her hair, at least it's not hotsa. She's not really carrying. But one second, that's true. But when she gets to her friend, she's going to have to squeeze out her hair from the oil. And schita is a malacha also. So once we do the malacha of schita, then what? Then what? Why not just carry the utensil with the oil? Because what's Rabbi Rav Yossi have the opinion that the concept of schita does not apply to hair. Why not? Rashi says, because according to these opinions, shukasha, because hair is kasha, it's hard, and hair doesn't truly absorb. Rashi says, afilu tema yesh schita v'se'ar. Ultimately, again, even if you say there is schita and se'ar, v'yar la b'kli, derech sayra, the kama de efshel shenuye mishaninan. Because it will say again, even if there is schita v'se'ar, but whatever degree you could do things with a shinui, better to do things with a shinui. After we'll stop over here for today. We're going to pick up with the sugi of the Yoledes, as well as Brismila, some beautiful agarata tomorrow as well. We'll say yashakarach, shakarach to everyone joining us on Zoom, and shakarach to everyone on YouTube and the live share. We'll say shakarach, have a wonderful day.